I call the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee meeting to order. Today is Thursday, February 20th, 2025, and the time is 9:14 a.m. Members present are Representative Prox, Representative Holland, Representative Ruffridge, Representative Hall, Co-Chair Himshute, and myself, Co-Chair Mears. We have quorum to conduct business. As a reminder, staff and members of the audience may not approach the table. If you need to pass a note to committee members, please get the attention of my committee aide, Ariel Svetlik, and she will take care of it. Very importantly, I'd like to thank our recording secretary, Sophia Tenney, and helping us from the Juno LIO is Zach Lawhorn. On today's agenda, our first and only order of business is House Bill 35, version 34-LS-0355/N, an act relating to the use and possession of electronic devices by prisoners. This is the first hearing on this bill. Here to present is the sponsor and co-chair, Himshute, and her staff, Ella Lubin, and after the bill is introduced, we will hear invited testimony. We'll take a moment to allow Co-Chair Himshute to get settled and the testifier seat. When you're ready, please introduce yourself for the record and begin your presentation. Available online and in person to assist with questions, we have DOC Deputy Commissioners April Wilkerson and Jake Wyckoff. We have DOC Director of Institutions Zane Nyswanger, Highland Mountain Superintendent Brandon Jones, and DOC Legislative Liaison Rachel Turner. You got a lot of support, so to proceed, Representative Himshute.
Thank you, Chair Mears, and thank you to the committee for hearing this bill this morning. This is House Bill 35. I'm Rebecca Himshute. I'm from House District 2. I represent House District 2. That's Yakutat to Heidelberg, 500 incredible coastal miles here in Southeast Alaska. I have 21 communities, 11 school districts, 10 tribes, and 9 village corporations in my district. The bill before us today, House Bill 35, is an opportunity for us to modernize our Department of Corrections operations by allowing access to electronic tablets for people in the care and custody of the state through the Department of Corrections. We're one of only two states in the nation not currently providing this access, and so it's really an opportunity for us to, I guess, modernize but also provide opportunity to folks who are incarcerated here in Alaska, 95% of whom will return to a community in the state. And when they do that, having improved skills with electronic tablets will be one way to help keep them from returning to our care and custody. It also, through the tablets, would improve opportunities for education, healthcare services, legal resources, and opportunities for visitation. Importantly, the bill does not supplant whatever is already happening that might be an in-person opportunity for a class or work on their reentry plan or with family. Rather, the devices will allow expanded access to the kinds of things that will help them with successful reentry. This measure has been before the legislature before, and in fact, there's a companion that we hope will go through the other body with a member of the Senate, other body's minority. This bill has had bipartisan support in the past, and it's really just a matter of the machinations of what we do here that has prevented this bill from getting across the finish line. So we're bringing it back for your consideration. And we do have with us in the room one of the tablets. There is a pilot program right now at Highland Mountain to test out how it might work. These devices are not a luxury. These devices are critical access to, again, the four things that we're trying to achieve: increased opportunity for education, telehealth, virtual visitation, and preparation for reentry. So they don't have open internet access. Rather, through the vendor, it's very restricted. Like I said, we have one of the devices here in the room, and we can pass that around and allow you to explore if that would be helpful. We could do that at an at-ease, or we could do it at the end of the meeting, or we can do it on the record. It's really pretty flexible. We also have some invited testimony with us here today. So I've probably said enough. I'm available for questions, or we can go through the sectional analysis if that's helpful.
Let me first recognize that Senator Myers is in the room, who's carrying the companion on the other side. And then, yes, let's go through the sectional, and then we can pass the tablet around.
Hello, for the record, my name is Ella Lubin, staff to Representative Rebecca Himshute, and I will be reading the sectional analysis for HB 35. Section 1 includes four important changes made to Alaska Statute 33.30.015, Section A. The first of these changes is an amended list of devices that prisoners are prohibited from having in their cell, to include telephones. It also includes new language prohibiting computers and electronic tablets unless used for a purpose approved in a later, newly added subsection in the bill. The second change adds the television rating of TVMA under the list of prohibited movie and television show ratings. The third change adds accepted uses for electronic devices. These accepted uses include rehabilitative and reentry plan purposes, access to legal materials, access to healthcare services, and expanded visitation opportunities. The fourth change in Section 1 adds language prohibiting correctional facilities from charging fees for email or online visitation services. In Section 2 adds a new subsection, F, to Alaska Statute 33.30.015, stating that online visitation may supplement, not supplant, in-person visitation or other in-person rehabilitation efforts to the extent practicable. The last section of this bill, Section 3, adds clarifying language to state statute regarding the applicability of an effective date. Thank you.
We have a question from Representative Holland.
Thank you, through the chair. Thank you for this. I'm curious, going back to the Section A change, adding the telephone in the prisoner's cell, if you could perhaps clarify for me how that is potentially guided or limited in a way that might avoid the telephone now being used for purposes that might be a concern.
Through the chair, these are the prohibited items. We may not allow a prisoner to have the items in Section A.
If I may chime in, it sounds like there's some cleanup language that's included in this bill as well that brings things up to existing practices.
I hope that answer was correct. Was that correct? Okay.
Through the chair, yes.
It starts on page 1, line 4. The commissioner may not, then go to your Section 3, allow a prisoner held in a state correctional facility operated by the state to A, possess in the prisoner's cell, and then the line that you're looking at is lines 9 and 10.
Just a short follow-up.
Follow-up.
Thank you for the clarification. I think I was misreading that. However, the language as we go into number 2, where we now say we can, where you've got the electronic tablet, led me to read this a little bit, because what we're doing is introducing the ability to have tablets, and in that enumeration there, it kind of sounds like we're letting a have it, but then I jumped to the wrong conclusion that maybe a little cleanup would be helpful in the future so that we're clear. But I do see that it then says unless used for, so I think this is probably technically correct. I just read it quickly and reached the wrong conclusion, and somebody
chair,
else might.
It's a double negative kind of thing.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, often in bills there's when we're touching sections, there's additional things that kind of need to be added in. So we take the opportunity to clarify some other processes as we go along. Are there any other questions before we get into our show and tell? Representative Brox.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, I don't recall whether there was a fiscal note for the bill last year, and I don't see one yet for this bill. Is that because I'm not looking in the right spot?
Through the chair, to Representative Prox, this is a policy-only bill, and the actual cost of the devices and deployment of the devices will be a separate measure addressed in potentially this year's budget, probably very likely FY27.
Okay.
Brief it is. We're back on the record. We had a little clarification. Representative Hemshute.
Thank you. Through the chair, there is a fiscal note. We don't have it yet. There was a snafu with the department. It is a zero fiscal note because it's a policy allowing them to do what they need to do, which then will come with a budgetary consequence.
Representative Prox?
Yeah, follow up. Through the chair, in addition to that, there's a preface. I think this is a good idea, not trying to kill the bill. But we're responsible through the Executive Budget Act to get measurable goals and objectives and et cetera. And there seems to be enough data collected from other states that we should be able to predict some sort of benefit and measure that and see how effective this is going to be. Is that something we need to work on?
Through the chair, there is a current pilot program. I could invite the department to come and speak to the pilot, would that be helpful?
Fine. Me, that's not my decision.
Representative Hemshute, is that going to be covered in our invited testimony and we can deal with it then? And those questions?
No, Chair Mears, the department is not part of invited testimony. We have reentry specialists for invited testimony or reentry volunteers.
That's what I get for not looking ahead.
But the department is available.
Thank you. Would you like that at this point, Representative Prox?
Yes, please.
Yes, please.
Good morning. For the record, my name is April Wilkerson, one of the two deputy commissioners for the Department of Corrections, and I do have some lifelines. I have Deputy Commissioner Wyckoff as well as the Superintendent of Ohio Mountain. I apologize. The fiscal note was submitted late. It is coming before you. Because this is just granting authority and we do have the pilot program operational, what our intent is to issue a zero fiscal note, finish up through our pilot process, and then come forward through the budget process with any financial changes that are necessary to fully implement the program. What we are hopeful to do is, with the changes in legislation, identify some efficiencies that will help offset some of the costs associated with implementing the tablets in full. Right now, the cost, there is an item in our budget for about $249,000 specific to the Highland Mountain pilot project. That is associated with current legislative restrictions in statute. And so with the passage of this bill and expansion of the pilot, we are hoping to offset some of the future costs associated with implementation and full implementation of the pilot of the tablet program.
Follow up. Just comment. There is, we have to recognize, quite a bit of skepticism about this program, understandably so. I think it's a good idea, but it would really be helpful to quantify the expected results that we're going to get out of it. And it's not just an entertainment device or some way to keep your drug distribution system going. But there is, we have to recognize that. There is quite a bit of skepticism about this program, and I think that would help to sell it, if you will.
Through the chair to Representative Prox, we appreciate the comments. We really do. We look at this as a public safety measure as well as a reentry support for the population. As we expand the use of telehealth, that is less individuals that are being transported outside of the facilities into the community. So we hope that with the reduction there, as well as that will leave individuals in custody, allowing them being seen while in custody, reducing our transport cost, and maintaining safety. We do feel that there's measurables. We also feel that if we can utilize the tablets for commissary or visitation in lieu of some of the other elements, that it there are some measurable items that we do feel that we can provide back.
Representative Ruffridge for the department or the bill sponsor?
Thank you, Chair Mears. For the department and permission, I actually have just a series of questions, if you would be so kind as to allow me to ask them all.
Let's get our questions out.
Through the chair, thank you for being here today, Deputy Commissioner. What in this pilot program, what is the cost of one tablet?
Through the chair to Representative Ruffridge, it is a per account fee right now, and it's $50 a month per account.
And through the chair, I think that answers my second question, which is, I assume that this is from a company that does this service and then charges a monthly service fee for the device and for the security features on said device?
Through the chair to Representative Ruffridge, that's correct. We entered into an agreement with a corrections grade tablet. The vendor came in and did deploy their own network and their own. They operate the security, the infrastructure, and then they operate the tablets within that closed network.
And through the chair, is there a facility fee for that network setup that's in addition to the $50 per month?
Through the chair to Representative Ruffridge, we did coordinate and the department did pay the vendor for that infrastructure for the initial pilot. We will be going out with passage of this legislation to further expand the program. We would go out for an RFP, and that would be something that would be negotiated through a contract.
Thank you. Through the chair, what was the initial pilot fee for Highland Mountain?
Through the chair to Representative Ruffridge, I believe in totality for the infrastructure, getting it up and running, in FY24, we paid about $300,000.
Thank you. Last two questions. I think there was some confusion last time we heard this bill about whether or not a person in incarceration would be able to use the tablet in their cell. From the language in this current version, it seems to indicate maybe, but maybe not. What would be your reading or interpretation of that as to whether or not, I guess at Highland Mountain currently in the pilot program, are they using tablets in their cell or in a separate sort of electronic use area?
Through the chair to Representative Ruffridge, I can take a brief stab, and then if you would like, we do have Superintendent Brandon Jones that is over Highland Mountain and really working with the vendor, boots on the ground for this program. But it is very limited right now, and they're not using it in their cells. I don't see where this would restrict. So if someone was taking a class or needed to have something available to them, I think it would be something that, the way the language is written now, that we could accommodate as long as it was a DOC-approved item. If you wanted more information, Superintendent Jones or Deputy Commissioner Wyckoff?
Thank you, and I'll just ask my final question, then we can maybe hear from them if that's okay with the chair. Seems to indicate in this language that there needs to be a rehabilitation or reentry plan. Just, you know, pulled this up to sort of look through what that would be, and that would be a written case plan. I think, interested in asking some of our invited testifiers as well, but in your understanding, would a person need to have a written plan, a care plan, in order to use a tablet, or would it be available to all incarcerated individuals?
Through the chair to Representative Ruffridge, the tablets would be available to all and anyone that was incarcerated. It would not be just those that had a case plan developed for them, but I would defer to Deputy Commissioner Wyckoff.
Okay, and then final comment. The language here certainly says to facilitate the prisoner's rehabilitation or compliance with a reentry plan developed under 3330.011. So if the intention is to have it be used for all incarcerated individuals, I would really, and that might be a question for the bill sponsor, not for you. So thank you.
So are we done with our line of questioning, Representative Ruffridge?
Yes, ma'am.
Or anyone else online?
Well, if it please the chair, we could certainly hear from the superintendent, I think, at Highland Mountain, and just the question about how that's being used currently. And but that, again, is up to you.
We've got some time, so let's get our questions answered. Superintendent, did you hear the question? And can you please put yourself on the record and share your information?
For the record, Brandon Jones, Superintendent, Highland Mountain Correctional Center. I believe the first question was, are the tablets able to be used inside of the offenders' rooms? And for this pilot project, they are not. The vendor was able to successfully not allow the network to reach the living sleeping areas. So in the community day rooms and the common areas throughout the facility, education areas, the medical areas, in those spaces, they could utilize the tablets. They'll have connectivity. But once they leave that area, there's no more connectivity. It could be adjusted, though, to go in into their room with language change.
Superintendent Jones, I have a question on that. So having the language in the bill be a little bit more open would allow you to adjust depending on how things are going. It seems like having a little bit more open language would give you more flexibility as things evolve.
Through the chair, yes, it would. It would give us a lot more flexibility to work with individual offenders and meet them where they're at. Not everyone is able to be out in the common day areas and the community centers. They need to work inside of restricted housing units and with mental health clinicians, and we need to be able to meet them where they're at and give them these services.
Thank you, Superintendent. My experience is that everybody learns differently, too, and sometimes you're fine working in a more open environment, and sometimes you need a little bit more solitude to be able to concentrate on things. So I think that flexibility might be a good thing. Representative Rufford, do you have any more questions for the superintendent?
Thank you, Chair Mears. I think the question is in regards to the bill language regarding the need for compliance with a reentry plan or a case plan. I guess in my reading of that statute, it doesn't seem to indicate that every person that is incarcerated is required to have a case plan or reentry plan until they're getting closer to the 90-day window of leaving incarceration. And maybe I read that wrong. So I'm just wondering if you could provide some context for whether or not the individuals using their tablets in this pilot program are using so under a care plan or case plan.
Through the chair.
We lost you there, Superintendent Jones. Are you the best person for answering that question, or shall we have someone else take that on?
Sorry, are you able to hear me now?
Yes.
Brandon Jones, Superintendent Highland Mountain. Yes, through the pilot project, this is not linked to a case plan.
Thank you. Deputy Commissioner Wilkerson, did you have some follow-up on that?
Thank you. Through the chair to Representative Ruffridge, I think when you look at the statute in its totality, this section specifically associated with the tablets is really more associated with what the prisoners may or may not have available to them while in custody. And I think the section that you're referring to is in another area within the statute. I'd love to have a conversation, maybe offline.
Thank you, Chair Mears, and maybe that is for the bill sponsor. I mean, it seems clear to me. The electronic tablet under this subparagraph may only be approved to facilitate, and then, I mean, it seems clear. So, and maybe I am missing something, but If I'm reading it that way, I'm assuming other people might as well. So,
Representative Hemshoot.
Thank you, through the chair, to Representative Ruffridge. Alaska's Constitution includes a right to rehabilitation, so I don't know if that helps with the specific language you're looking at.
Through the chair, Representative Hemshoot, I think certainly it would if we didn't specifically mention Statute 3330.011. So that linking, I think, in this regard, that statute in the bill language ties it to very specific language regarding reentry and rehabilitation plans or case plans.
Thank you. It sounds like some further discussion offline might be helpful with that. Are there any other questions at the moment for the department or the bill sponsor? Representative Holland.
Great. Thank you, through the chair. A couple clarifications or follow-up. First off, on the discussion we just had with Representative Ruffridge, how does this affect what I now understand to be a significant number of people incarcerated that are pre-sentence? Will they have the benefits and access to the tablets and the programs here, or is this only for folks that have been sentenced and are now down into this recovery plan language issue we just got into?
Through the chair to Representative Holland, the current pilot program at Highland Mountain is available to the unsentenced population as well. So if they choose to have an account, they can set up an account. And I apologize to Representative Ruffridge. It does say that, but it also says or the education. So if they're utilizing the tablet for any of these areas identified within that section, they would be eligible, regardless if they were sentenced or unsentenced.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. Follow-up?
Yeah, thank you. I'm going to another follow-up from Representative Prax. We were talking a little bit about the data and the metrics here. And perhaps as a follow-up later, I am curious. I understood and I heard a lot of aspirational benefits of what this bill will do, and I think there's some data here. And if we get to it, some invited testimony. But I would really enjoy and I think appreciate seeing the data that came from the pilot. Do we have objective data from the pilot that showed the benefits that we are ascribing to the benefits that we would get if we expanded this? And I haven't yet heard any, and maybe it's there and I missed it, kind of objective data from the pilot that undergirds the aspirational goals of why we're expanding this now.
Through the chair to Representative Holland, you didn't miss it. We have not, we are still in a very, I would refer to infancy stage of the pilot program. The pilots were fully deployed, or the tablets were fully deployed the end of March last year, and it was very limited. We had the digital law library on the tablets. We added our offender handbook to the tablets. And then we opened the tablets to professional visits where the attorney clients could have a professional visit. Since then, and that all got put in place the end of March, April. Since then, we have continued to work with the vendor, and probably around October, we deployed the grievance process onto the tablets. And then we're continuing to work with the vendor to deploy the request for information process onto the tablets. It's been kind of shaky. We're developing those processes with the vendor. So we don't have the actual data and to be able to present to the committee to show actual achieved efficiencies yet. But as we continue to move forward and expand that, we are hoping that we know that we will be able to bring that forward at a later date.
Final follow-up?
Follow-up.
Thank you. And quick question, I hope. I'm curious about the vendor. One of the areas I focus a lot of my attention on is increasing the business activity of Alaskan businesses and local vendors. Is this current vendor an Alaskan provider that's providing both the infrastructure and the tablets?
Through the chair to Representative Holland, our current provider is not an Alaska vendor. They do have an Alaska business. They are on the NASBO contract. That's how we entered into an agreement with them. However, we would go out for an RFP to fully expand the tablet program into the other facilities. And there is preferential given to Alaska businesses.
Thank you.
Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you, Chair Mears. I guess this question would be for the superintendent potentially, but how many tablets were deployed at Highland for this pilot?
Through the chair to Representative Ruffridge, we asked for between 350 and 400 tablets to be set aside for us. That was based on the population capacity for the Highland Mountain Correctional Facility. In looking at some of the accounts since July, we have seen as many accounts created as 380, almost 390, and then as low as around 318. But Superintendent Jones might have some additional information.
Just a follow-up, if I may.
Let's just do the follow-up now, Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you. And before we go to the superintendent, so each incarcerated individual would receive their own tablet. Is that how that is functioning?
Through the chair to Representative Ruffridge, I would like to defer this to the superintendent on how he's handling those.
Superintendent Jones?
Superintendent Jones, could I please have the question again?
Thank you. Through the chair, Superintendent Jones, under this pilot program, each incarcerated individual would receive their own tablet, and it would be somewhat personal to them, not a series of tablets, let's say 30 or 40 of them, that could be checked out or utilized or something along those lines.
Through the chair, yes, you are correct. They're issued a tablet within the first, as early as within the first day of arrival, and it's a unique PIN identifier set up for them, so that tablet will stay with them through their incarceration.
I believe Representative Himshu, do you have follow-up on that?
I did want to add to that, Chair Mears, and this bill is authorizing language for the commissioner to set the regulations and figure out what works for tablets, so this bill does not say that it's a one-to-one. This bill gives the commissioner the latitude to set the guidelines and the department the regulations for how tablets would be used. So this simply allows the use of them, which is currently not allowed.
I'd like to do a time check. We've got 15 minutes left this morning. We've got three invited testimony on, which I believe are going to talk about some of the benefits of this policy change. So let's get into our invited wrap up the presentation, get into the invited testimony, and have the opportunity to come back with further questions in the future.
Chair Mears, might I offer that we could pass the device around for folks to look at, knowing that this is a sample device, so there are some games on here. Maybe in other states those are used. It's not necessarily something that would be available in Alaska, and I couldn't figure one of the games out. Sudoku was on there. I could get that.
All righty. Well, let's pass that around. If you can pay attention to the invited testimony while the tablets are on. Otherwise, watch yourself, and maybe we'll do it afterwards. So thank you, Representative Himshu. We're now going to be hearing invited testimony. First up in the room is Terry Tibbett, coordinator for the Alaska Reentry Partnership. Please proceed to the testifiers table, introduce yourself for the record, and provide your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Mears, Chair Mears, and to the rest of the committee for the opportunity to present today. For the record, my name is Terry Tibbett, and I am the coordinator for the Alaska Reentry Partnership. And the Alaska Reentry Partnership is a coalition of 8 reentry coalitions throughout the state. I'm also the co-chair of the Juneau Reentry Coalition here in Juneau. The partnership would like to go on record as supporting HB 35. The bill does a lot of things to help people who are returning to their communities after incarceration. It, as you heard, it removes a barrier in state law that restricts inmates inside correctional facilities from utilizing certain electronic devices such as computers, digital tablets, and we believe that these tablets would support rehabilitative programming, expanding rehabilitative programming such as vocational training, education, treatment and recovery, access to treatment and recovery, reentry planning, access to housing and employment assistance before returning to the community, getting all that stuff set up before they leave. It could also benefit telehealth, peer support, faith-based tribal visitation, and more. All these things have been shown throughout the United States to improve the likelihood of success after leaving incarceration. These rehabilitative programs increase the likelihood someone will get back on their feet and not reoffend, thus reducing recidivism. In today's world, it's also really important that people have access to digital technology so that they can be digitally literate. This is, in today's world, you need to be digitally literate in order to fill out applications for housing, for employment, applying for a job, banking, communication. A lot of people who have been incarcerated for many, many years come out and they don't have any idea even how to use a cell phone. And so having this access ahead of time before they release can help them have a leg up when they get back into their communities. Also, the Alaska Reentry Partnership supports improving DOC's digital infrastructure within the facilities so that they can provide safe and secure access to telehealth, video conferencing, closed circuit education channels, digital tablets, computer labs, and more. There are lots of things we could say about that, but I want to honor the time and invite our next testifier, Marsha Ose, who is the Reentry Coalition Coordinator for the Fairbanks Reentry Coalition.
Excellent segue. You must have a copy of my script here. thank you for your testimony, Ms. Tibbett. Ms. Ose, please introduce yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Yes, good morning. Hello, through the chair. My name is Marsha Ose. For those of you who don't know me or my story, I was a justice-involved woman. I'm a person of color. I spent many years living outside societal norms, so you might say. I come by my lived experience very honestly. I grew up surrounded by untreated mental illness, alcoholism, drug addiction, domestic violence, multiple forms of child abuse and neglect. I was prenatally exposed to alcohol, and I've suffered multiple traumatic brain injuries. I also attended, on an average, 4 schools per year between ages 6 and 15. I was in juvenile detention, foster care, and girls' homes. After running away multiple times between the ages of 12 and 15, I finally got away at 15, but I was sold into human trafficking, and I was trafficked for 5 years. I was arrested at age 20 for a felony DUI, resisting arrest, and assault. I was incarcerated, and I served probation time. At 26 in 1988, I entered treatment for intravenous drug use, and that changed my life. When I was growing up, not one person in my family or my school ever spoke to me about finishing school, let alone seeking higher education. I was a throwaway child because of my family's reputation. I was able to complete a GED at 18, and I've spent 34 of the 36 years of my career with only certifications in specialty fields. That isn't possible today. I'm currently the Fairbanks Reentry Coordinator with approximately 110 individuals currently seeking services from my coalition. Before that, I was the reentry case manager for 5 years, and before that, I worked as a substance abuse counselor for over 25 years in hospitals and correctional facilities, and I owned my own treatment agency, and I worked exclusively with community corrections. My primary clients have always been justice involved, and I consider this my life's work. I've spent the past 36 years working full-time, giving back to my community in various volunteer positions, and I recently completed an associate's and a bachelor's with 3 minors. That I'm here serving my community is truly a miracle and an honor, as I represent the true meaning of intersectionality, and truthfully, I am the face of many of my justice-involved clients. Today I'm here to discuss 2 items related to HB 35. First, the importance of creating a plan before reentry. Successful reentry means safer communities. When I served as the reentry case manager, digital technology would have helped me develop transition plans 90 days before release, and it would assist correctional officers, IPOs, and community corrections staff with their workload. Successful reentry is about building partnerships and support systems, not only for the justice involved, but for our frontline officers. We would be able to have multiple applications filled out and be ready to submit them to their field POs immediately upon release. The Fairbanks Reentry Coalition supports HB 35 and the Department of Corrections efforts to expand opportunities for inmates to access digital technology. Examples would include completing birth certificates, social security cards, Department of Vocational Rehabilitation applications, various treatment service applications, Medicaid applications, returning home applications, and be able to identify appropriate peer support specialists once they release. These are all vital resources that enhance reentry, increasing the likelihood of reduced recidivism and success in the community after release. Secondly, the effect that having educational materials while incarcerated has on inmates. When I think of this, I think of the statement Commissioner Winkleman has communicated multiple times. We want them to leave us better off than when they entered our facilities. The ability to offer education is proven to reduce recidivism and stimulate their minds positively. It also eliminates the effects of languishing in a correctional facility, and we all know languishing is used to describe a mental state that makes it very hard for an individual to feel positive about their life. Being able to offer education to support obtaining GEDs or high school education allows a person to gain better employment. It also inspires hope that they can obtain higher education or work in the trades. The other benefit of digital technology is the ability to help clients develop skills to address complications related to learning disabilities, traumatic brain injury, and other barriers providing self-help education. This would ease the impact on corrections and health staff and create safer facilities. Preparing this testimony, I asked several individuals working in Alaska DOC facilities what they thought about introducing digital technology, and the answers were unanimous. Please, we're operating in the Stone Age. We could get more GEDs completed if these folks could study on units, and since our facilities are limited by time and space issues as well as staffing limitations. I'm asking that we be the state that motivates individuals to do better upon release. Thank you for inviting me here today.
Ms. Oz, thank you so much for sharing your story, your advocacy, and your support for HB 35. Lastly, on the phone is Don Habiger, Reentry Coalition Coordinator for Juno. Mr. Habiger, if you can hear us, please introduce yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Mayors and members of the committee. Excuse me. For the record, I'm Don Habiger, Coalition Coordinator for the Juno Reentry Coalition. And I'm going to kind of truncate my points and try to get them done at, by the top of the hour, as I think that's when you end. So skipping a little bit, one of the founding principles of reentry coalitions is the risk-need responsivity principle. In short, the RNR principle is match the level of service to the offender's risk of reoffending. Assess criminogenic need and target them in treatment, and we do that in partnership with DOC. And tailoring interventions to the individual. An important tailored intervention to the delivery of reentry case management is beginning before release. And so that's an emphasis that we've talked about several times, and the ability of HB 35 to help. Somewhat as an aside, I'll mention two recent challenges that access to digital technology could improve insofar as pre-release communications are concerned and bettering the before-release case management process. Number one, incidents of visitation prohibitions due to DOC security needs. COVID is a recent example whereby all face-to-face visitations were eliminated. There was no reentry case management during that time unless it was through a phone. And incoming calls from incarcerated individuals to a reentry unit, whether it's a case manager or a coordinator, and they use the secure system. If the call cannot immediately be picked up and the individual chooses a collect call, we never know who is calling or how to help that individual. Now, one illustration. One exciting thing that access to digital technology can achieve within our prison system is a project like California's The Last Mile. The Last Mile program delivers technology training through a one-year curriculum, teaching web development fundamentals. Completion of the program results in job readiness at release and eligibility for high-wage earning income. The program is currently in 8 states, has achieved a 75% employment rate for those graduates, and more importantly, it has a 4% recidivism rate for those completing the training program. So in conclusion, the Juno Reentry Coalition believes access to digital technology inside the DO facility will improve reentry success. Access to digital technology is a tool in the toolbox that helps the incarcerated to community pathway and continues the state's efforts at reducing its overall recidivism rate. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Habiger. That's the end of our invited testimony for today, and with that, we'll be putting the bill aside for further consideration. That concludes our meeting for today. We'll be getting back to you with our schedule for the next week as we're still working on Department of Public Safety and Department of Corrections finance subcommittees. We'll get in touch with you shortly. Seeing no further business before the committee, this meeting is adjourned. It is 10:01 a.m.